All right. So this is our fifth class on Active Hope. There are copies of this book available, and also if you would like to have a copy to read and you don't want to buy it, we don't actually have one in the library, so I can commandeer one of the ones we have for sale and just make it a library book, and then you could sign it up if you wanted. So. Going to just pass these around if you've seen them already. You don't need to take one if you're curious. These are the four premises of the class, which I will also cover in a moment. Just pulled out last class's notes. I'm like, that seems familiar. So just to briefly visit our Bodhisattva vow. So this is from the Diamond Sutra, where the Buddha is saying to one of his disciples, "Those who would now set forth on the Bodhisattva path should thus give birth to this thought. However many beings there are in whatever realms of being might exist, whether they are born from an egg, or born from a womb, born from the water, or born from the air, whether they have form or no form, whether they have perception or no perception, in whatever conceivable realm of being one might conceive of beings, in the realm of complete nirvana, I shall liberate them all." So that is the Bodhisattva's vow, is to care for all beings, no matter what. So, the four premises that I'm making in this class are: we are in a climate and ecological emergency. Two, that the time has come to shift the focus from green consumerism to working for a systemic change, or at least being able to have conversations that go beyond just our consumer choices, which remain extremely important. And if everybody, you know, made earth-friendly, people-friendly choices, that would be lovely. But it also is a way that we can distract ourselves from other aspects of this question. Three, that our spiritual practice compels us to act for the welfare of all beings, as I just pointed out. And that such action is inseparable from our spiritual practice. So it's not just an extra thing that we do, extra thing that we add, that our spiritual practice without being bodhisattvas is not Mahayana Buddhism. And at the same time, also, that in acting for the welfare of all beings can be practice. It can be informative and help us let go of attachment to self and all of the things that we're trying to do. It actually helps. It's not a distraction. It's not something extra. And four, in our efforts to bring about a life-sustaining society, the time has come for solidarity and inclusion, that there's a place for everyone in what the authors of this book, Joanna Macy and Chris Johnstone, call the great turning, like the potential to really change course, have our society change course. That gets us away from comparing mind, or even from getting stuck on our own ideals, that just everybody, there's a place for everybody. To define active hope, so this is just kind of a little bit of a review before we get to tonight's chapter. The way that I'm defining it is working for what you hope for in the world, regardless of how hopeful you feel about the likelihood of things turning out the way you'd like. Working for what you hope for in the world, that being your focus, is not about how hopeful you are about things turning out. And the two goals of this series, which over the weeks, I'm kind of, it's becoming more clear to me, is to encourage people to ask themselves, am I doing enough to respond to the suffering in the world? And encouraging, I feel like sometimes we need to be encouraged to ask that question, because frankly, I think sometimes we avoid that question because where do we go with it? I mean, to face that question by ourselves sometimes can be overwhelming. I mean, what if our answer is, no, I'm not doing enough to respond to the suffering of the world? Then I just feel bad and guilty and powerless and overwhelmed. And, it's a difficult place to go with sincerity. So in the practice of active hope, we seek to support one another as we contemplate this question, and also hopefully be guided by the promise or the hope that there is a different way, that there is a way through this. There is a way to ask that question and not be overwhelmed. And then also in asking that question, to really trust one another to do our own practice, to trust ourselves to do our own practice, that each of us will have a response to that question. It's not going to look like our neighbor's response. It's not up to us to judge whether anybody else is really asking themselves that question or what their answer should be or anything. It's really just about doing our own practice and trusting that, you know, everyone else is doing theirs. And then the second goal, so that was sort of like exploring that question together. And then two, if you do want to do more and are able to do more, because it's certainly possible you might say, I'm not doing enough, but you know, I cannot possibly actually do anymore. So there's that possibility as well. But if you're like me, and you have a sense, no, I'm not doing enough, but I don't see a way forward with that, that then exploring together, finding our own response, finding our own thing to do, which I have two ways to put that I find inspiring. One is, what is something we can do that will be a contribution and will put our soul to rest? And this is a phrase from Martin Luther King Jr. in his letter from Birmingham jail, quotes a 72-year-old African-American woman participating in the bus strike. So they were boycotting the segregated buses. And when asked about her tiredness, she said, my feet is tired, but my soul is rested. And when I hear that, I just go, you know, that's what I want. I want my soul to be rested, regardless of, again, how hopeful I might be or whatever, but just to know that I am doing what I can. And also then Greta Thunberg, the teenage Swedish activist, climate activist, says, when we start to act, hope is everywhere. So instead of looking for hope, look for action. Then the hope will come. So in terms of this book and what we have covered so far, the cultivating active hope, they see it as, they call it a spiral of with four stations or positions. I kind of like to call it the fourfold path of active hope. Because we're used to, you know, we have like an eightfold, you know, we're used to thinking like that. Because these are all aspects of this cultivation of active hope. So one is, and there's a chapter in this book for each one of these. Coming from gratitude. So that's deliberate cultivation of gratitude, which brings about a sense of well-being. I mean, research and experience tells us. Brings about a sense of well-being, it grounds us, it builds psychological buoyancy, they say, so we can do this work. And I also think of this as like, to even expand it just beyond, but the aspects of our practice that help sustain us. And so we have to have that be part of our fourfold path. Honoring our pain for the world, recognizing that pain and fear are key survival mechanisms, and that we should be feeling them given the situation, that they're a natural response, and that trying to avoid them or deny them or distract ourselves from those feelings is not only probably fruitless, but also means then we won't be responding the way that we should be. So learning how to use our pain rather than avoid it. And then just another favorite quote from Thich Nhat Hanh asked, what we need to do to save the world? What we most need to do is hear within us the sounds of the earth crying. So then the third part, which actually has four chapters in this book, is seeing with new eyes, questioning our assumptions, recognizing our limited views, opening our minds, exploring the wisdom that others have discovered with respect to how to relate to the earth and our fellow beings, and, you know, in other spiritual traditions, in deep ecology, in systems thinking, all of this stuff. And that's, I feel like this part is incredibly compatible with Buddhism, because in a way, seeing with new eyes is enlightenment. Enlightenment really is seeing with new eyes. It's breaking free of our constrained and limited views. So it's not even so much about adopting other views. Like what we're going to be talking about tonight is a different kind of power, ways that we tend to look at power and make assumptions about power and other ways to look at it. So this isn't so much about then adopting the real view of power or something like that, but just realizing, oh, I don't have to think about it that way. If I think about it this way, it's actually more hopeful or liberating or fruitful. So that's what we do in Buddhism. It's like, what's the most useful thing that we can do? Let go of this view, cultivate this quality, and things work better. So that's the seeing with new eyes, and then later there'll be a bunch of chapters on what they call going forth, which is to experience the benefits of these empowering perspectives. We want to apply them to that task of addressing the challenges we face. The final station, going forth, involves clarifying our vision of how we can act for the healing of our world, identifying practical steps to move our vision forward. So, tonight, we're talking about seeing with new eyes, a different kind of power. So they talk about how the power, how we typically think of power, is power over. In the old story, power is based on a position of dominance or advantage over others, a position that secures privileged access to resources and influence. This type of power is about getting your way and having others do what you want. The bottom line here is being able to win in a conflict. The more you can beat others, the higher you rise. We refer to this type of power as power over. Let's see where it leads. So then they go through several points, features of this way of looking at power. So feelings of powerless are widespread. By the very nature of this system, only power is concentrated in a few people, and everybody else is relatively powerless. And they say they, in their workshops that they do with people about cultivating active hope, and this is, they often hear, there's no point worrying about things you can't change, and you can't change the world. So that's a most of us feel. Power is viewed as a commodity. Their example is even votes can be bought and sold. Power generates conflict. This type of power generates conflict. And they give this example. Dominance gives privileged access to resources. And to maintain dominance, huge amounts are spent on being strong, that is, able to win a fight. In 2010, the global arms expenditure was $1.6 trillion. For perspective, spending 10% of this annually could eliminate extreme poverty and starvation throughout the world. But instead, it's meant on keeping power. They say power fosters mental rigidity. This kind of power, because, you know, changing or being influenced by shows weakness or giving in. And that's also an interesting one. They point out power becomes suspect. It's viewed kind of negatively. We associate power with corruption and with abuse, and in some ways, like, we kind of want power, but we also kind of don't want power. So they said, suspicion of power leads people to be reluctant to act authoritatively, which I think is not a consequence of this kind of power structure that I had thought about before. But so a new story of power that they suggest is power with, and they point out the word power comes from the Latin posere, meaning to be able. The kind of power we will now focus on is not about dominating others, but about being able to address the mess we're in. Rather than being based on how much stuff or status we have, this view of power is rooted in insights and practices, in strengths and relationships, in compassion and connection with the web of life. So they talk about how the qualities that allow us to manifest and develop this kind of power are courage, determination, and foresight. And they say these are qualities that we can work on and cultivate. Thinking of courage and determination as things we do rather than things we have helps us to develop these qualities. They emerge out of our engagement with actual situations and the dynamics that arise from our interactions. This approach is relational, and we call it power with. So then they talk about how the power of power with arises because of what they call synergy and emergence. And so synergy is when essentially the sum is more, or the whole is more than the sum of its parts. So when things come together and something is created that the, you know, two things couldn't have done on their own. And they quote a poem from D.H. Lawrence. Water is H2O, hydrogen two parts, oxygen one. But there is also a third thing that makes it water, and nobody knows what that is. So in terms of emergence, then they say, if we focus only on each separate activity, it is easy to dismiss it by thinking that won't do much. To see the power of a step, we need to ask, what is it part of? An action that might seem inconsequential by itself adds to and interacts with other actions in ways that contribute to a bigger picture of change. The concept of power with contains hidden depths. So far, we've described four aspects, in the chapter that I haven't read. But first, there is the power of inner strengths drawn from us when we engage with challenges and rise to the occasion. Second, there is the power arising out of cooperation with others. Third, there is the subtle power of small steps, whose impact only becomes evident when we step back and see the larger picture they contribute to. At last, there is the energizing power of an inspiring vision that moves through and strengthens us when we act for a purpose bigger than ourselves. All of these are products of synergy and emergence. And then they say the concept of emergence is liberating because it frees us from the need to see the results of our actions. Many of our planet's problems, such as climate change, mass starvation, and habitat loss, are so much bigger than we are that it's easy to believe we are wasting our time trying to solve them. If we depend on seeing the positive results of our individual steps, We'll avoid challenges that seem beyond what we can visibly influence. Yet our actions take effect through such multiplicities of synergy that we can't trace their causal change. Everything we do has ripples of influence extending far beyond what we can see. There's no way we can personally fix the mess our world is in, but the process of healing and recovery at a planetary level can happen through us and through what we do. For this to happen, we need to play our part. That's where Power With comes in. So then there's they suggest three ways to practice Power With, to get yourself into kind of thinking about that. And each one, I'm going to do an exercise. So I'm going to do there'll be little writing exercises, and then we'll split up and you share with the other person, if you're willing. You can always sit out if you want, but to share with another person what you came up with through the writing reflection. So would you hand out the form, or you could... One person can take the box of pens and hand them out, and the other person can hand out the... And our pens have decreased in number somehow. They wandered off, so I think there'll be enough. Yes, but I'll go get a pen from the hall. No, I'll go get one from the hall. Thank you. One more here, and I just took from that tape. Oh, we finally stole them already. I stole them already. All right. So the first way to cultivate or start getting ourselves thinking about this Power With is to hear our call to action and choose to answer it. So take maybe about 5 minutes, which may end up seeming quite inadequate, but it says, a letter from Gaia. If the Earth could speak to us, what would it say? We can take a step toward finding out by imagining the Earth can write through us. On a blank sheet of paper, start a letter to ourselves that begins, "Dear," and insert your name. This is your Mother Gaia writing. This is the Mother Earth writing. And then they say, continue the letter with whatever words come naturally. Let your hand do the writing, don't think about it too much, and just let the words flow. If you would prefer to start this letter using different words, please do so. I said, all right, like, I'll tell you what the next exercise is, and if you want to just finish up what you're doing, that's fine. So the next way to think of Power With, say, to understand power as a verb arising from what we do rather than what we have. So they suggest two open sentences that get you thinking along this. The first one is, I empower myself by empowered. I empower myself by, or what empowers me is.
Those two.
Yeah. I empower myself by, what empowers me is.
And we're supposed to do both?
They suggest that, I mean.
You pick one.
whatever you want to do. I mean, they suggest both, but... And then I'll give you the last one in case you're already done with the second one. which is to think of an example of something you have done in your life that made a difference, that made a positive difference. I say it doesn't have to be grand, just something positive that might not have occurred otherwise if you didn't bring it about somehow. Recall something that you have done in your life that made a positive difference in the world. So do people want to again, sharing is not required, but do people want to share in a big group or pair off?
Big group.
Yeah, I know, it's not that. It'd be kind of interesting. I don't think I could read out loud my letter from the earth to myself without crying. Anybody else?
Someone else can read it for you.
Then I'll cry, but at least I won't be choking up as I read, right? All right.
Dear Cameron, you are me and I am you. We suffer as one, we thrive together. Have compassion and love for yourself, for that is love for me. And act as if I am not only your mother, but your child. Be me as I have fed you. Embrace me as I embrace you. Love as I am the source of love.
I'll just cry during everybody's.
Well, if you want to not cry, I'll be using my moment. My moment is cry. You're so uptight, Peter. You know, it doesn't make so much of a difference to me in the long run. You know, trilobites, dinosaurs, woolly mammals, people. It's all the same to me. But if you want to save your place in my bosom, you better stop tinkering around with the system. Talk to your friends. Better yet, talk to your enemies. Time is running out. Not necessarily for me, but definitely for you. Because like George Carlin said, I'll shake you all off like a bad case of fleas.
Thank you. I think I'd like a copy of that one. Want to read mine?
Dear Domino, this is your Mother Earth writing. Please don't despair. I know it has been difficult to find a way to make a positive difference in the face of all the greed, hate, and delusion, but if everyone who felt like you do acted, there really would be change. Let your passion and care and concern show even more obviously. Use your writing and teaching to influence hearts and minds. Put yourself on the line for what you believe in, and don't let yourself be discouraged by skeptics. Seek the support of like-minded people and be motivated purely by love.
You're awesome. You have power. That inspirational power.
Anybody else want to share their letter before we move on to the next one?
I'll share mine. Dear John, this is Gaia. Just want you to know a few things. First of all, you people are not the only things that deserve to live and thrive. Mm. You sometimes seem to act this way. Mm. Second, you will go extinct someday, and your actions are bringing this moment precariously close. You will bring innumerable other beings down with you. Third, it isn't about stuff or your clan or winning. It's about joy and sharing and connecting with all creation. Happiness and contentment are a result of right thinking and action. Fourth, the earth, that's me, is also a being. When I get sick, I send out antibodies to kill the bug. I have a fever.
Mm. Mm. If anyone, is willing to share these more widely, it'd be kind of sweet to, like, put them on the website with or without your name, and just so that other people can see what we came up with, what we've been thinking about. So this is an interesting one, the second one about the open sentences that empower. I empower myself by... the second one. What empowers me is... Anybody have any interesting discoveries in that arena? This is why we pair off, because then you would have to share.
I empower myself by assisting those around me that request my aid, mm-hmm. by loving myself wholeheartedly, admitting to my faults, and being mindful of ways to better myself. I am empowered by witnessing acts of kindness among friends, strangers, whomever, and seeing tender moments of unconditional love. Mm-hmm.
Somebody else's earth.
I did too, actually.
Okay, good. I said I'm empowered by working with others in diverse, mostly harmonious groups toward shared goals. Mostly harmonious because working with people is messy, and creating safe spaces to raise questions and concerns is always necessary. Makes me lose power? Mm. So then what's the opposite of that? What's the remedy for that? So, you know, when I get angry and, you know, reactive, that's when I lose any power to make any change. So, if I cultivate calmness, non-reactivity as the antidote to that which makes me lose any power. Mm-hmm.
I didn't write anything down because I'm still figuring it out.
It's a good observation too. What empowers me? I kept on coming back to whether I looked at it kind of in the positive or the negative. I really did kept on coming down to other people and recognizing, like, no matter how much I believe in something, think something is right, or want to do something, if I'm surrounded by people who are just like, that's not going to work. I can't sustain it by myself. And yet, if I'm around other like-minded people who are like, talk about, like, you know, from the Buddhist perspective, the power of Sangha. Like, I have no power without other people. Even if I'm coming up with the idea or something like that,
I keep thinking that, like, people that really put their life on the line, like Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, I don't know what Mandela did, but Mahatma Gandhi, they all derived their power from their faith, right? They couldn't do it without that strong, unflinching faith they had. And for us, since we can't have faith in God or whatever, it's, for me, the faith in what Zen calls into being, into connection, really, really feel it experientially, not just like a concept, but that's practice. And then you act from that, because you are not different than me. I mean, I'm far away from that, but you saying that, that's where I can imagine, like, courage, determination coming from, right?
Actually, you just reminded me of, like, kind of a funny story. So I don't know why, if it's a cultural personality thing, I don't know, but I'm very conflict avoidant. I think many of us are. And so Shintai and I were just camping, and she's also very conflict avoidant. So we had a beautiful campsite for two nights, and then the third night somebody moved into the campsite across the way and turned their car stereo up as loud as they could and opened the doors and were, you know, out, like, you know, dropping F-bombs and, like, partying and, like, listening to their music. And we're kind of like, all right, so what do we do? And we asked the camp host, you know, are there any rules? And it's basically, like, quiet by 10. And we're like, we can't really hear the music too much. We can hear, like, boom, 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 boom. You know, we're just like, we just came to the woods. And we thought about it, and we just, like, we actually ended up, it was a pretty empty campground by that point. We found another campsite and spent an hour breaking everything down and moving to another campsite. Mm-hmm. Rather than... And then we were talking about that later, about just, like, what is that? You know, why is that? I mean, I even thought, like, I'd just go over and at least and say, how long do you think you're going to be playing the music? You know, because we're just thinking, should we move? Should we wait it out? But then I thought about how if they had been harassing or bothering another camper, that hesitancy would melt away instantly. I would have no issues whatsoever about going over and getting in their face. So in a way, I feel kind of like when I am acting on behalf of others, I'm empowered. I mean, that still leaves the question as to why I feel a lack of power when it's on my own behalf, and yet I just think that's really interesting when I think about that kind of interconnection. I would rise up like that for sake of somebody else.
So you're counting yourself out of all living beings?
I guess, but I think actually more of it comes down to, like, just a deeply ingrained, like, look, life sucks sometimes. Get over it. If you fussed over everything that you didn't like, just let it go. Like, so in a way, it's just like that's my, it's pretty much, you know, that's the Midwestern mode. If it's something you can bear, you bear it. You don't just, which, you know, actually makes for a slightly repressed but fairly harmonious social situation. Were you going to say something?
I feel as though, it's music, and there was the beat, which I understand is very jarring. I kind of like it even when I'm stopped at a red light. Next to me is like that. But I feel as though, I would love to know what Chosen would say about that, because I feel as though she would say, just let it be music. She's so music-oriented.
Yeah.
But that really wasn't what really struck me about your story. What it brought out for me, and what I think I hear in other people's descriptions of Mother Earth talking to them, is that this is really a people thing. This is all about taking care of each other. So I don't know. I wrote down your goals and I can't recall them right now, but I don't know what we're going to come up with. But the sense I have is that however ecologically oriented it is, people will be very much a huge part of it. It won't be necessarily about saving starfish and, you know, the painted western turtle and things like that. Those are incredibly important. But if we choose a project surrounding the painted western turtle, I can also see this bringing children into it, bringing people of color into it, because this whole mess we're in, to me, is about what do we do with each other? Because we're all going to be in trouble. So that's what I'm hearing out of your story.
Well, just in case, I mean, just to kind of bring that up very briefly, is just, you know, this idea that we'll, hoping if any of us want something, to do something more, to find some way to respond. It doesn't have to be, but I'm kind of picturing that as being just an individual thing, that every one of us is going to have a different call. That's what they were getting at with the Gaia letter, was like, what is the Earth or beings asking you to do? You know, what are you well-placed to do? What is your heart, you know, calls to your heart? We were discussing active hope on the little our little podcast online discussion sangha, and one of the participants just, you know, when it came time for him to check in, he just wept with sadness and despair. And what he really talked about was just how he wished everyone was vegan, and, you know, the suffering that the animals go through and all this. And but it's interesting, later he came back and he said what he realized is that that's his calling. His calling is to work on behalf of the animals. Which is like, yeah, you know, there's a lot out there to do. So whatever it is that really calls to us is what will be most fruitful. Well, unfortunately, we didn't get to share the cool things that we did, because that one of their points was that you can feel empowered by witnessing what others do and have done, which Which that's another thing that I kind of envision. If it's kind of a standard part of our practice to find some kind of action to take in the world to help the world become a better place, witnessing each other doing that, knowing about it. A lot of times this is something that we just do, you know, we just do over there quietly. But to witness and share that and realize, you know, if we could kind of take an inventory of the impact we're all having. Even if that impact isn't trying to raise compassionate, non-racist children, you know, whatever. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.